This morning, or this evening rather, we're turning back to the book of Ecclesiastes. As we do, I want you to think about the strange issue of memory. How difficult it is sometimes. In some ways, I know, this is a bit of confession time for me, in some ways I have a good memory. I can remember facts, and I can remember numbers and tidbits of data pretty well, especially if I've read it. But then in other ways, I have a horrible memory. I can't remember events that I lived through. There's so many times where I'm unsure if something happened in my life, if it's a story I read about, or if someone else told me about it. I'll have to ask Grace, now, did we do that or not? I can't remember. The really scary part is that friends tell me it only gets worse. So that concerns me. Well, Solomon here is dealing with the matter of memory tonight. If you remember, we're at the end of his life, and I don't think he has a failing memory, but in some ways, he probably wishes it would. As he looks back over his life, there's a lot for him to remember. And as he leaves this final instruction for us, there's a lot for us to remember in this. He wants us to tell us what's important to remember and what we should be focusing on as we go through life. Last week, when we returned to our study after the absence of several months, I did a fairly extensive review of the book up till this point. In case you're here, I just want to remind you all that this is essentially Solomon's final report. His life's study is being laid out here as he looks at it. You can think of it that way. He's trying, throughout his life, he was trying to answer the question, is there anything that would give me lasting value? Can I find ultimate gain of any kind during this brief time that we spend as life? Because we know we come, our years are short, and then they're gone. Is there anything that will be lasting, that can be left behind, that gives real advantage? So he was trying to figure that out. And throughout the process, he recognized that we live under lots of frustrations. This is a sinker's world that we live in, and we're dealing with frustrating perplexities all the time because of that. And because of all that perplexity in the world we live in, we can't find any ultimate gain. The great advantage that we have through living by wisdom is only relative. It's not ultimate. As we apply the principles that God gives us through His revelation to our life, we can find relative benefits. It's better to obey God than to not. But there's no ultimate gain that we can gain. We cannot, in other words, manipulate God by doing just the things God tells us to ensure that things will turn out the way we want. God doesn't work that way. We also have been told as we go through that we don't have to understand fully how God governs His world. He's God. In fact, the fact that we don't understand it helps us to live by faith. And that's what we're expected to do. God gives us wisdom so that we can live well during our lives, so that we can enjoy the gifts that He gives us, but ultimately our life becomes a life of faith. Now last week we started looking at Solomon's final poem that he places at the end of his book. The poem began in chapter 11, verse 7, and it runs through chapter 12, verse 8. And the poem is designed to bring Solomon's entire work here to a conclusion by instructing us one last time about how we should make the most of this life that he keeps calling hevel, that Hebrew word hevel, that means frustrating perplexity. An enigma, something we can never fully figure out, and because of that, there's always can be an emotional discontent that can come. It's his key word. The poem itself, I told you last week, contains two key ideas. It has the idea of rejoice and remember. Last week we looked at the first of those ideas. We looked at the idea of rejoice. We were told that we're to rejoice. Both of those ideas were introduced in the first two verses, in verses 7 and 8, and then developed in following sections. Each of the three sections ends with that Hebrew word, hevel. Verse 8 ends with hevel. We have it translated in the New American Standard as futility. Verse 10 ends with the word hevel as well, but we translate it in the New American Standard, unfortunately, as fleeting. And then verse 8 ends with it in the refrain that we know so well, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That's his hevel, hevelin, all is completely in the end, from a human perspective, perplex. We'll never totally unravel the mystery of God. So our poem lays out, and as I said, we looked at the first part last week. Now we'll be picking up the second part. Specifically in this poem, as Solomon's at the end of his life, he's addressing young people. He's leaving some final words of advice that if a young person can grasp before they reach the age he's at, they'll have a lot better memories to look back on. His wise advice was for a young person to be able to enjoy life, rejoice in the life that you have. But if you recall, the rejoice was tempered with, remember that you're under the watchful eyes of God. So enjoy your life, chase after the desires that God has given you, but remember that you're under God's watchful eyes. Because someday God will bring to judgment everything that you do in your pursuit of your desires. Tonight, we're going to look at the second idea in the poem as we look at the third and what would be the final section in verses 1 through 8 of chapter 12. That the key idea here is remember. And specifically, Solomon tells us, remember God before it's too late. Not a very difficult concept, is it? Remember God before it's too late. Solomon here again is specifically addressing young people. You know, those people who think they have their entire life before them. That the end of my life is so far in the future that I don't have to consider it. Those are specifically who he's talking about. Remember God before it's too late. But all of us need to learn the lesson. Because until we're at the end of our life, we need to remember God before it's too late. Remember God. Before we even begin to explore verses tonight, I want us to ask the question, what does Solomon mean when he commands us to remember God? What does it mean to remember? Is he simply asking us to recall some basic facts that we know about God? Some information for a test? You know, we can rattle off the attributes of God. Is that what Solomon means when he says, remember God? No, he's talking about something a whole lot more active than just being able to list, here's God's attributes of greatness. Here's God's attributes of goodness. He's talking about something active. When Solomon tells us to remember in this passage, he means that we're not only to recall those facts about God, but we're to use those facts in such a way that they impact us. We're to allow the notion of God that we get from the facts we know about God to shape the life that we live. It's to guide us. It's to instruct us. It's to direct our steps. That's what he means when he talks about remembering. This is not an intellectual acknowledgement that he is God. This is a submission to him as the sovereign God, the God who is the ruler, the one who has the right to rule the universe, and therefore the one who has the right to rule our lives. Remember God before it's too late. Notice how verse 1 begins in chapter 12. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. Solomon is giving us the second key idea here for his concluding of this letter. Remember your Creator. How are we to live in this sin-cursed world? We're surrounded by things that frustrate us, things that are mysteries to us, that are perplexing when we try to unravel them. How are we to live here? Remember your Creator. That's the path of wisdom. That's the path that leads to joy in the midst of this world that frustrates and confuses us in the uncertainties that we encounter in life. Remember that God is Creator. We're creatures. He's the Creator. That means he is in control. It's his sandbox. He makes the rules. Now, before we begin to work our way through this text, I want to warn you. This passage probably has some of the most diverse interpretations of any passage in the Bible. If you read any commentaries on the book of Ecclesiastes or hear various sermons on it, this is one area that very, very intelligent men will not agree on. In fact, very intelligent men cannot even agree on what type of approach should be used to interpret this passage. I say that to warn you, because if you do listen, you're going to find something different than what I'm telling you tonight. You'll encounter ideas that are diverse from these. As I struggled over this passage, the conclusions I'm going to present tonight don't completely agree with anyone that I read. They're kind of a combination that, as I worked through it, made the most sense to me, but they're different even from my Old Testament professor. So I'm saying that to tell you, you know, this is one of those areas where you can't take real strong stance on all the details. The issue is that Solomon uses very picturesque language without direct connection of what he's referring to being called out. What we have are a combination of ideas here that I think as we work our way through, though, help us understand the big picture they're trying to make, and that isn't difficult. It comes out of that first command, remember your Creator. So we're going to try and make sense here of what he says without creating too many complicated problems along the way. There are some general truths here that are readily apparent. The overall command, remember God before it is too late, is what we need to lock in on. And I believe what we have here as we look at these verses is Solomon telling us what too late is. And I believe as we look at the stanzas here that break down into three different groups, there's three different things that he tells us to remember before. If you look in our New American Standard translations, or the NIV or the ESV for that matter, look for the little word before. It's in verse 1, remember your Creator before, then at the beginning of verse 2, and again at the beginning of verse 6. Three things that he says, remember before this. Unfortunately, the King James doesn't consistently translate the Hebrew for the same word that's used in each case, so it's a little harder. But if you follow the grammar, essentially what Solomon is saying, remember your Creator before, and then gives us these three ideas. So we're going to trace our way through these three ideas, because they all emphasize the same thing. Remember God before it's too late. The first idea comes in verse 1. Remember God before extreme difficulties come. Look at verse 1. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. Now, I want you to remember, Solomon composed this poem as a whole. Even though we took 2 weeks and we have a week in between, Solomon composed this entire poem as a whole. The same burden that drove the first part of the poem is driving the second part. He wants young people to understand before they get too far in life what they need to do to follow the path of wisdom, how they can structure themselves to best follow God's commands, and how they can have the least difficulties in life. So the same thing that drove the first half is driving this half. Young people, listen up. Here's the issue that you need to know about. Young people don't think about the future. They don't think about what's coming. They live for the moment. And all too often, young people don't remember to bring God into the picture when they're living in the moment. We all know, right? Teenagers especially, they're gone, so I can really talk about them tonight. They're in the Arbor Inn. Teens are known for being invincible, aren't they? Nothing can hurt them. And the problem that comes with that is God becomes someone that they need later, not now. And Solomon says, remember God before it's too late. It's in that type of context that Solomon is beginning to tell us one of the first things to remember God before extreme difficulties come. Most of us probably know by now that life is not all fun and games. As I look around the room, I immediately call to mind many difficulties that I know people have gone through. We know life is not filled without extreme difficulties. There are serious trials that come along. The term that we have translated in our verse here is evil days can simply mean days of trouble. The bad days. When the bad days come, the things that we call trials. The kind of days that, you know, sap the fun out of life in a hurry. That all it is painful to go through the next moment. Like I said, as many people in this room know, sometimes those days even stretch into years. The trials can be extremely severe, and they can be of such a kind that it seems like no end is in sight. When that happens, you can quickly find yourself echoing those words at the end of the verse, I have no delight in life. What Solomon is trying to do here in this first point is prepare us so that we can protect ourselves and be ready when that severe trial comes, as it may very well come in any of our lives. He's already concluded several times that there's no way to predict during this life, in this frustrating, sin-cursed world that we live in. There's no way that we can predict if God is going to bring this type of situation into our life or not. He may give us extreme difficulty. We don't know. These types of trials are simply all too common living in this world. Plus, God governs this world in a manner that's completely inaccessible to us. No matter how hard we try, when we try to unravel how God governs His world, and we, if you recall, we think we have our thumb on it and we've got it figured out, slips out from under because sin always enters into the picture. So we don't understand it. We can't predict what God will or will not do. All we can do is live by faith in whatever God brings along the way. He's still good because He's still God. That's the word of faith. So Solomon is not giving us any advice how to avoid possible trials here. He says these days will come. They're unavoidable from our perspective. But he is telling us how to prepare before they come. And the key to preparing is to remember your Creator before the time comes. In other words, develop a lifestyle of submission to God early in life. Develop a lifestyle of discipline. Learn to trust God. Learn to obey God when life is good. Follow His commands as a regular part of your life. Develop habits of prayer, habits of Bible study, church attendance, memorization, all those other things that we know a mature believer is intended to develop. Remember God before the times of trial come. Have the habits in place. Wrap yourself in them. Gird yourself so that you're ready when the hard times come, that you've got foundation that you can stand on. These habits will see you through. All too many times, you know, even in my relatively short ministry life, I've dealt with people that are going through very difficult times in their lives. And when I start talking with them and counsel with them to help them see where God's grace can be applied by focusing simply on the unfailing love of God as displayed in Christ, what I discover is they haven't developed these habits. They haven't learned to focus on the grace of God when times are good. So now when it's more difficult than ever to feel it, it's hard. It's like I'm speaking a foreign language at this point. The problem was that when times were good, the person simply took God for granted and never stopped to really dwell on the wonder of God's grace. Now when that grace is needed, the foundation isn't there. And building a strong foundation in the midst of a battle is very, very difficult. Of course, the good news is that God can use those times to develop that understanding in any of us. There's never no hope. But those who have it in place before the difficult times come are in much better position to endure with contentment, to have joy, and even rejoice in the midst of trials. Because they've learned those skills before they were in the midst of the trial. The best time to learn the skills that will carry us through difficult times is before we're in them. And Solomon says, start when you're young. And how do you start? Remember your Creator. You're under the sovereign hand of God. He makes the rules for your life. Remember God before it's too late. Simple concept. The first idea that he gives us is remember God before the difficult times come. Secondly, he tells us, remember God before the effects of age come. As I mentioned, this passage has a wide variety of interpretations, specifically in the section we're coming to now. This is the area where Solomon uses extremely picturesque language, and he doesn't provide any solid reference points. But I believe all these pictures deal with the effects of age. In fact, the majority of commentators in the end all admit you can't read this without understanding age. The question is, what image is he really bringing to bear on age? Well, I think one of their issues is they're trying to nail it down too tightly. Just let the picture speak for themselves and see what he's trying to tell us about age. Let's read these verses 2 through 5. Remember your Creator before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened, and the clouds return after the rain. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble, and the mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through windows grow dim, and the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. And one will arise at the sound of the bird, and all the daughters of song will sing softly. Furthermore, men are afraid of high place and of terrors on the road. The almond tree blossoms. The grasshopper drags himself along, and the caperberry is ineffective. For man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street. I'm convinced Solomon's talking about the aging process here. Aging is a difficult process. Should each of us live long enough, there are going to be added aches and pains that we can't avoid. It's the fact of life. It doesn't matter how young you are, that is the future should you live long enough. The simple reality of living in this world under the effects of sin is that our bodies will age and they will deteriorate. We probably all have loved ones experiencing the declining health. Several of you are dealing with many issues directly that arise from providing care for family members that have aging and failing health. What I believe Solomon is doing here with this poetic language in these verses is describing that reality, the trials that come with aging. I think verse 2 gives a general impression here of the loss of joy that comes with aging. The light of life darkens. It's not as much fun as it used to be. The storm clouds gather time and time again. You know, when I was in Brazil one time during the rainy season, it didn't matter how sunny the skies were in the morning. You could guarantee around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, clouds would come, a torrential downpour would come, the streets would get flooded, and after about an hour or so, it would end and the clouds would disappear. And it was sunny again. It was their rainy season. And tomorrow it would happen again. You could count on it. And that's the idea that I think Solomon is going through here. As you age, there's recurring elements that come about. You know that as one bout passes, it's going to come back again. And as that happens time and time again, as the clouds keep returning, there's not a lot of fun left in life. It makes it difficult. Verse 3, he talks about the watchmen trembling and the mighty men stooping. The picture seems to be a physical weakening that comes with age. We're just not as strong as we used to be. The legs aren't as strong and they can tremble. The back begins to stoop. We deteriorate physically. The grinding ones picture the loss of teeth that are associated with old age. Granted, that's not as much of a concern now with the advent of dental care as it once was. You know, now you can replace your lost teeth with dentures. But we can still understand the picture. As you age, it's normal to lose teeth. Similarly, the window becomes dim. Well, it's quite normal to develop cataracts on our eyes as we age. Before the advent of surgery to remove them, the world would grow dimmer and dimmer, and there wasn't anything that could be done about it. Verse 4 seems to refer to the loss of hearing and the effects. It pictures a person who loses his hearing as if the doors are being closed. It doesn't matter how loud the sounds are, they sound like they're far away, that the doors are closed. They're coming from far outside. In fact, it seems like everyone sings softly. Those who are singing the songs are soft. You can't hear them. But I think there is a little bit of irony that he throws in the middle here. Because while one can't hear anything that one wants to hear, it seems like you sleep so lightly that the slightest sound disturbs you and you can't go back to sleep again. I think that's what he's referring to when he says one arises at the sound of a bird, but you can't hear the singer singing. It's the effect of age. Verse 5 then wraps up this picture, emphasizing the final outcome. As we age, we lose our confidence because we lose our strength. We deteriorate. We lose the vigor that we once had. We even lose the original color of our hair and we look like the white almond tree that blossoms. It changes. And all these things point to the inevitable end that comes. There will come a day when the mourners are going to come out and remember our life because we're no more. Now, I will admit, those are rather sobering thoughts. This is not exactly one of Solomon's more feel-good passages, is it? He's not really given us a lot to rejoice about. But the point that Solomon is trying to leave us with is how to live our lives wisely. We really have no choice as to whether we're going to age or not. That comes with living life. We will age, and aging will not be pleasant, at least not completely. there's hardships that come. But while we do not have a choice as to whether we'll age or not, we do have a choice as to whether we will mature as believers or not, so that we can handle our age gracefully. Ultimately, whether we mature as believers or not boils down to a choice and how diligent we are to remember our Creator as we go through our life approaching our aging years. God's desire would be that by the time we come to the stage of life where we're feeling physically all the effects that come with aging, that we're strong believers so that we can age gracefully, that we would be mature believers, that we would have developed a pattern of depending on Him, a pattern of rejoicing, of praising and worshiping Him, a pattern that focuses on all the blessings that He gives us so that we can be a blessing to all those that we come in contact with as we age. I'm sure we've all heard the saying, so-and-so is just a crotchety old person. You know, folks, there should never be a crotchety old believer. Rather, as we age, we should become better and better testimonies of our Lord and Savior and everything He's done for us, because we've had more and more years to come to know Him. And that knowledge, that maturity in our Christian life should shine from us, but it needs to start by remembering our Creator before we feel the effects of age. Now, I try to not often use individuals as an example of a point, especially when I haven't had the opportunity to ask them personally if I can. But tonight I'm going to make an exception in that case, because I know that if any of you have had the opportunity to spend time with our oldest church member, she exudes this example. Talk about Dodie Farnsworth. She's nearly 99 years old now. How close is she, Anita? April 15th, 99 years old. We know that she has a tumor now in her brain that the doctor says will be terminal. But for the past several years, whenever I visited Dodie, there was one main theme to her conversation. I want to tell you about my Lord. I want to tell you about Jesus. In fact, when she talked about her physical problems, the only thing that she would say about her physical problems, I hate it that I can't get to church anymore. I want to be in church. You know, that's the kind of believer that old age should have us reflecting. We should be focused on our Savior. By learning to be that kind of believer now, the sooner we start focusing on Him now, the better we will be when the aging hits. We need to develop deep habits so that we can have them as the last thing we hang on to. Remember your Creator in your youth. Remember God before the effects of age come. That's the second item that Solomon tells us to remember in this poem. He wants us to remember God before it's too late. Thirdly, we're to remember God before the finality of death comes. Look at verses 6 through 8. Remember Him, in other words, remember your Creator, before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed, the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, said the preacher, all is vanity. Again, there's a lot of debate on how to handle the various items in these verses, especially really focused in on verse 6. How do you take these different items? But to me, it seems that Solomon is just trying to convey two main points in this verse, and that's all we need to really take from it. First of all, he's trying to help us see that death comes with extreme suddenness. With very few exceptions, it comes very unexpectedly. It often comes with no warning at all. We never know when it might happen to any of us. So thinking that we have time to remember God later is the life of a fool. The wise person remembers God now because death comes unexpectedly. But second point he's trying to make here is that death is final. When death is, even when it's expected, even when we know it's coming, when it's not so sudden, it's still final. We're always sobered by the reality of that. I've never seen a funeral yet where that's not the case, where the finality of death is not at the forefront of our minds. You know, there are no do-overs after death. We don't get a mulligan on this life. There is no second chance. Once death comes, that's the end. Verse 7 here, we see the theologian come back. Solomon, as I said, is a great theologian. He understands the revelation of God. And he reminds us here that death undoes the creative process of Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. If you look back at that verse, that's the verse that tells us how God took the dust of the earth and then breathed life into it. The life of man, man's spirit. So here Solomon is reminding us that when it comes to death, that process is reversed. What God did in his creation is undone at death. The spirit that God breathed into man returns to God, and the dust goes back to the earth. Just a quick side note, once again here we see that Solomon did have some understanding of eternal life. That wasn't, as we've talked about many times, the focus of his book here. He's trying to help us, how should we live wisely while we're on this earth? He wasn't focused on what comes after, but he knew that death wasn't the end of our existence. Several times he told us to live our life in light of the fact that we'll have a judgment after death. So he knew there was more to life than just our physical life. Sometimes you will encounter scholars who try to deny that, but all you have to do is read the book honestly and you see that he knows that's coming. But we can't do anything about that. Once we hit the eternal state, life is done. All we have to do is look forward to the judgment for how we live this life. So he's focused on what should we do now? Live wisely when we're able to make choices. Solomon's point here as he closes out this poem is that we will die. That's an inevitable fact of life. In fact, he ends with that overall battle cry that we've seen. Hevel Hevelim, vanity of vanities, as we translate it here. Frustrating and confusing and perplexing is what this life is. No matter what you convince yourself of, death will come. No matter what we do, we cannot escape it. Life, with all of its frustrations and complexities and perplexities, will march to that outcome. But Solomon is not a fatalist. Yes, death is inevitable. That's a simple fact. A wise person recognizes the facts of the world he lives in. But we should not think that this in any way drives him to despair. That's the problem with translating this as vanity or meaningless as the New International. It sounds like Solomon's moving to despair, and that's not the case. If we understand this poem at all, we see that his real concern is whether or not we're going to be ready when death comes. Death is coming. Will you be ready when it comes? Will you be ready to stand before God because you lived your life in remembrance of Him? As one commentator put it, our dying is God's business. God's will is our business. God's will is that we live each day of our life remembering that He is the Creator. He is the one who's in ultimate control of our life and our death. Because God is the one who gives life and God takes it away. But in between, God is to be acknowledged for who He is, the Creator, the Sovereign, the one who has authority to direct each and every day that we live. The sooner that we come to understand that, the sooner we begin to live accordingly. Unless we live in acknowledgement of His right to rule our life, we're not ready to face death. This is especially important for young people who believe that death is still far in the future. But there is no assurance. Death could be tonight. It could come any moment. And even if we're not a young person, that same truth needs to hit us. Remember your Creator before the silver cord is broken. Remember God before it's too late. Solomon here has been addressing young people specifically, but I'm sure we can realize that all of these points are applicable to each and every one of us. As long as we're still alive, it's not too late for us to remember God. Solomon's given us three different items here that we're to remember God. First of all, remember God before extreme difficulties come. Life is never easy. All we have to do is live a few years, and we will know that for a fact. We can personally attest to it. But the path of wisdom is one where we develop habits of remembering our Creator before we encounter those hard times. We work to develop spiritual disciplines now so that when the difficult times come, the disciplines are in place and they can carry us through. Secondly, remember God before the effects of age come. Unless the Lord returns soon, already takes our life early, all of us are going to experience the effects of aging. Some are experiencing more than others even at this point. But if we have developed the habits that lead to spiritual maturity, we can be ready for the effects of aging. We will be able to rejoice and praise our God even while our bodies experience the decaying impact of living in a sin-cursed world. Lastly, we're to remember God before the finality of death comes. Once death comes, it's too late to change anything. Our decisions are all past at that point. We need to be ready to live for God, or we need to be ready for God by living for Him now, while we can. It's never too soon to commit to that in our life. I told you at the beginning that my memory was bad when it came to things that actually happened in my life. My prayer, though, is that no matter how bad my memory gets, that I'll be able to echo the words of John Newton, the author of Amazing Grace. I shared these in class Wednesday night. At the end of John Newton's life, he's reported to have said to a friend, "My memory is nearly gone, but I remember two things. I am a great sinner, and Christ is a great Savior." Remember God before it's too late. Let's close in prayer.